What's up, y'all? Welcome to another episode. And before we start this episode, I want to encourage all our listeners to please subscribe and rate our channel. We definitely appreciate that. Also, feel free to give us feedback. Like I said, all three of those things, we definitely appreciate it. I just want to start the show off and letting you guys know. And here's another episode. I hope you all enjoy it.
On the way to the top floor. I ain't selling out though, but I'm on the way. Got a lot of real, must motivate. Hold all the moves, I'ma put in play. On the way.
Motivation for all the real ones, nigga.
On the way to the big check. You ain't know I'm up next, but I'm on the way. You ain't take risks cause you too afraid. I'ma just eat till I'm overweight. On the way. On the way.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Millionaire Mindsets Podcast. I am your host, Xavier Miller, sitting with my co-host, Deanna, as usual.
Hello, everybody.
And today we have two, this will be another very special episode. We have two special guests, a couple. We have Khalil and Kiara, better known as Charm City Buyers. They're real estate investors. It's a dynamic duo, like I was getting into, and they're based out of Baltimore. Welcome to the show, guys.
We're excited to be here.
Yeah, we definitely excited to have you, man. You guys are doing big things. And I actually got put on to you guys through my sister-in-law, because she listens to the podcast, and she was like, yo, reach out to Charm City Buyers. And I'm like, all right, give me their information, I'm gonna look them up, blah blah blah. So she gave me the info. That's why I reached out to you guys.
Follow you guys like months ago, so when he said y'all was gonna be on the show, I'm like, I've been following them already, so I'm like, let's go.
To get right into it, I want to ask, I usually ask our guests this when we start, is like, so what made you want to get started like with real estate, just on your financial journey, like how did that get started?
Sure. So I've always been an entrepreneurial guy by nature. I think that's a proven track record since high school and even middle school, selling candy and all kind of different ventures. So Kiara and I met, and really what got me into real estate was her.
Yeah, so I've actually always been really excited and passionate about real estate. So I was the kid growing up pointing the houses that were vacant out to my parents, like, yo, we should buy that. And they're like, girl, if you don't sit back. So that kind of, like, that passion just followed me. And as we started to talk about what our long-term goals were individually and together, we talked about how working a 9-to-5 and getting a pension and retiring at some job after 30, 40, 50 years just didn't seem like it fit us. And so we started to look at that fit, and real estate being something that I was always planning on doing in some way, shape, or form came up as something that could be a possibility for us. And so when we, you know, weighed all of our options and talked about different things that we could do, real estate actually checked the most boxes for both of us. And so we jumped right in together.
Wow. Okay.
So what was, I would say like your first deal, or what was that starting point? Like, how did you get yourselves finally like fully immersed in real estate?
Yeah, so July 2012, we started our real estate journey, formed the LLC, and then in October 2012, we purchased our first property. And it was a 3-unit shell up in Hartford, Connecticut. But you can imagine, between July and October, that's only, 5 months or something? So we had to learn a lot, we had to network a lot, we had to find different properties to vet and figure out whether it fit what we were looking to do, short and long term. Then we had to close on it, find the finances, do all that kind of stuff. So we moved pretty quickly, pretty aggressively, as you all know, I'm sure.
That's
like, for us, we were like just young enough still, because we were 22, 23, or 23, 24.
My first year out of college, I lived at home with my mom and dad, and I shared a room with my brother. And out of my $35,000 a year salary, I saved $20,000. So I had enough money to feel confident and comfortable that when I moved to Connecticut, following love without a job, something would work itself out. And it did.
Yeah, that's smart. And that's interesting that you say that you stay home with your parents, because this is a conversation that we always have. Like, I don't live anywhere near my parents, but I always say, like, if my parents live near, I would definitely move back in just so I could literally be pocketing everything. And it's a lot of people, they feel like it's like, they ashamed if they have to live with their parents at a certain age. So that's like very interesting that you like kind of like kind of I say put their pride to the side and like move in.
Absolutely.
With
the, and do that. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to run my own thing and do my own business, but and I knew for a fact that you need money in order to do that. So mm-hmm. I figured if I move back home, if I could have stayed longer, I certainly would have. I still got a really great relationship with them and saved more money. The time had called for me to move on to the next step. I advise anybody fresh out of college, save. As soon as you get to $100,000, then you can go and get an apartment or something. But just save.
Yeah. That's the same strategy we got.
For sure. I think what's really important when you do those types of things, like you move back home, right? You're doing it in a way that's setting yourself up for something rather than kind of coasting. I think that's where there's like that stigma around moving back home with your parents. Like, what are you doing or what are you working towards in that situation? If you're living at home to try to push yourself to the next level, like, dope. But if you're living at home playing video games all the time, somebody gonna look at you sideways.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. I agree 100% on that. Now, a question I had because I know this is something I learned about last year, but I'm not sure if a lot of people know about this. Like, do you mind explaining, like, what opportunity zones are?
Yeah, absolutely. So opportunity zones started in, the law went into effect during the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017. So December 2017, it was officially a law in this Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. And what it is they are specific zones that are low-income census tracts that are designated as opportunity zones so that they can benefit from the program. How the program works is that capital gains is realized and then put into a qualified opportunity fund, and that fund then deploys money into opportunity zone businesses or opportunity zone properties. Mm. So a lot of questions come from that, but that's at its core, that's how the program works. There are estimated $6.1 trillion of unrealized capital gains in the stock market. And the federal government wants to provide an incentive to people who control that money to then realize those gains, which means sell stocks and then put that money to work through the Opportunity Zone Fund.
So how does the average person take advantage of that?
So the average person needs to know exactly where the Opportunity Zones are. That way they know whether they live in one, first of all, whether they are adjacent to one, second of all, whether friends or family members are in one. That way when that $6.1 trillion comes into their backyard, they know why, they know how to work it, and they can leverage that money coming in for their own benefit, for their own property value increasing, for their own businesses, to protect themselves from displacement or gentrification, and also so that if they're looking at a potential investment or they're looking at starting a business, they can target an opportunity zone so that they get better treatment when it comes to money coming in.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah. That's super dope. Because like I said, this is something I just like learned about like fall of 2018. And I'm like, wow, I didn't really know too much on it. I'm like, wow, that's crazy. So I know, like, so for, like, the average property in the opportunity zone, is it, like, costly? Or is it just, how does it work?
So opportunity zones are low-income census tracts. So they're historically areas where there is not a ton of, when you think about income taxes that you're paying, like, there are people who are living in these areas historically don't make a whole lot of money. And so a lot of times these neighborhoods are going to be the neighborhoods that are qualified or thought of as hoods or just areas that just don't have the or haven't seen the economic investment that other neighborhoods might have.
Yeah, okay. Typically the unemployment rates are higher. Educational systems are of a lower quality. Crime is typically higher.
Right.
These are areas that, according to the New Market Tax Credit census tracts, severely distressed. Just areas where investment has not been seen in quite some time. Oh. So the program provides an incentive for wealthy people really to put their money to work in these areas because they get substantial tax breaks.
Wow, that's crazy. So with saying all that, like, many people would be scared to invest in places like that because they would consider that the hood or whatever. So that's interesting that you guys are taking advantage of that. And what's your mindset just on investing into communities where a lot of people are scared because they're like, man, that's the hood. I don't want to put my money in there. What like, what's you guys' mindset on that?
We love it.
So I think that a lot of times the areas that people shy away from are areas that, you know, a lot of us might have grew up in or have friends that grew up in those neighborhoods or those blocks. And so just like you were able to go to the barbecue there years ago, you can probably, you know, you can walk up and down the street now. I think it's what's important is that you just respect the people and the spaces in the neighborhoods in which you invest. And I think that it's really important that people who value community, value the neighborhoods, value really just helping communities grow and flourish, do invest in the hood or areas that some people shy away from, because that's how you change and really push communities forward and change the narrative on what the hood is all about, right? Back in the day, that's where the neighbors and your aunties and your cousins, everybody was right there. And I think that over the years, things have changed. And so, you know, it's our way to take some of these vacant eyesores and these old houses that did for years and turn them into homes and make it a positive for the community as a whole. So for us, we're not like one-off like investors. We're really looking at how do we impact and change communities in a positive way. And that's why it's so important to us what we do here in Baltimore, like how do you change the narrative of Baltimore and take it beyond what you saw on the wire, right? And really focus on what is here and the culture here and the charm here. And now with the Opportunity Zone program, literally $6.1 trillion is focused on the opportunity in these hoods that we shy away from, right? If they see the opportunity, we should too. And that's really what we're all about.
Yeah, one thing that I do want to mention for the Opportunity Zone piece of it, you have to be very careful, and anybody really has to be careful. Not every what you would see as a hood is qualified as an opportunity zone. So there are maps out there, some are not accurate, some are accurate. You know, you really wanna make sure that you're figuring out where exactly those opportunity zones are. Just because you think it may be one doesn't necessarily mean it is one. There are some areas in Baltimore here that we question heavily, like who didn't advocate for this space? Because this is clearly an area that needs some financial lifting. Another thing that Kiara touched on and your question about us investing in these areas, you know, back in the day when we first started out, the very first property, we would literally go outside and sit on the stoop for hours just to kind of sit there, chill, learn the area. Our contractor, our first one, was from three houses up. The person who cut the grass was from around the corner. You know, it's those types of bonds that you build when you go into these areas. Our first, our second one. Now, as we're scaling and we got competing priorities taking over more of our time, it's a little harder to do that. But we absolutely take pride in sitting outside and saying, hey, you know, who lives here, or where's Miss Johnson, or you know, whatever. We've had it pay off. We've had neighbors who live close to our investment properties call us and say, hey, somebody's over here. I'm not sure if you expected somebody here, but I just wanted to give you a call. And we're, oh, okay, thank you. That's a contractor going in doing a bid, you know, stuff like that. Just, you know, we absolutely take pride in the areas that a lot of developers and a lot of investors shy away from.
No, and that's a very important thing. Like, I got two things I want to say before I forget. And, like, I'm so pro what you guys are doing, like, investing into those areas, because I always say, like, ownership is control. So if we buy back up the neighborhoods that people consider bad, that majority of us probably live in, we taking control back of our neighborhoods, and then we could control the environment. The environment doesn't have to be toxic or whatever it is. So that's why I'm so, like, pro investing into black areas or areas that people call the hood or whatever it is. And another question I had is, so if somebody wants to find, like, if they're in the area or they're in the city and they want to find, like, okay, is there any opportunity zones where I live? Do they just Google, like, okay, opportunity zones in Houston, or you know what I mean? So how would they, like, really find, like, the areas?
Yeah, so months ago, almost a year ago now, you could do that, and you'd be pretty safe. Now it's so hard to find the exact map. that you really have to be careful. We've got we share with people in our Opportunity Zone 101 exact maps. We give detailed background about how the program operates and functions. There are all types of different tiers and steps. After the 5-year mark, the 7-year mark, the 10-plus year mark, there's a phantom tax event on December 31st, 2026. It's a whole program that you know, we've studied for quite some time and learned about, and we share that information through our Opportunity Zone 101.
Yeah, so we put together that class because there's so much misinformation about Opportunity Zones, and so we have a lot of people who will read an article and kind of misinterpret it, one, and two, the fact that there's so many maps out there, and it's just really hard for people to be able to tell which ones are accurate. We put together, like, this whole class where we were like, here is what the Opportunity Zone program really truly is, this is how it works, and here's how you best position yourself. And so in that, we go into super deep detail about the Opportunity Zone program and also share the maps that we know are, you know, these ones are the ones that are going to be the most accurate because these are the folks who help create the actual zones in and of itself. So we definitely try to, like, share all the information that we can because I think it's really, really important that people understand truly what the Opportunity Zone program is, right? It's not just a bunch of, you know, it's not like you're going to go to, it's not like free money, right? Some people think it's like grants or it's all this free money and anyone could just go buy a house and they get the advantages of the program, but that's not how it's set up. It's really not set up for everyday people to be able to win from it directly. Mm. And so what's really important for us is that we make sure people understand how you can take advantage of the program directly and how you can position yourself to win indirectly as a result of the program, right? So that's what that 101 class is all about.
So if, for example, if I'm a new investor and I'm interested in buying my first rental, I should target an Opportunity Zone. It makes sense because most people are going to put their money into this zone, so the value of my property is going to increase. Finding money to fix it is going to be easier. It's just there are so many indirect benefits that it's important to know where the zones are and to know more about the program, and that's why we share it.
Okay.
I was gonna ask, like, so the class that you do on Opportunity Zones, do you do it in person with people in your community, or do you offer it online? Like, how will someone get access to the information you guys provide?
Yeah, so it's completely online. So we have, and the program is nationwide, so all the information is nationwide as well. It's not just Baltimore specific, but it's completely online. You can do it at your leisure. The 101 is an in-depth overview of what the program actually is and the maps, and then there's actually, for those who are like, I want to really take advantage, I want to start a fund, I want to invest in a fund, I want to really how I can take advantage directly from the Opportunity Zone program, we have an entire masterclass that has like so many videos and a ton of documents and everything else for people to take advantage of as well. But again, it's like, how do we kind of package everything, because Khalil's been studying Opportunity Zones for about a year and a half now. So kind of taking all of that, all the hearings and the meetings, all that kind of stuff, and compile the information in a way that people can absorb, understand, and then apply as they're investing each and every day.
Yeah, for those who are familiar, we talk about how you can combine Opportunity Zones with historic tax credits, federal historic tax credits, state historic tax credits, new market tax credits.
So you said something like it's not set up for everyday people to win. So like, why is that?
So the program is set up for the Opportunity Zone program is for people who have capital gains to invest in the Opportunity Zones. Not everyone has capital gains. Invest in real estate, and the only way to have capital gains means you're investing in a stock or real estate. It's appreciated in value, right? You bought a stock for $10, it increased in value to $100. Now you have $90, right?
Yeah,
you have $90 as your gains, right? You have to pay taxes on those gains. And so the program helps to manage the tax burden on people with with capital gains if they then invest that money in opportunity zones. Exactly. And not everyone has that. And so that's why, you know, it's not really set up for everyone to win if you don't understand. And so for us, it's how do we make sure people understand what game is being played so that they can, you know, be part of the process.
Yeah, so anybody who's knowledgeable can then be part of the process. So again, it's not capital gains. It's not money that you earn from a paycheck, right? That doesn't qualify as capital gains. Right. Capital gains typically are seen when you sell a house or you sell stocks. You know, low net worth, low wealth individuals may not have access to those resources. They may not be selling houses on a regular basis. They may not be selling stocks for, you know, tens of thousands of dollars. But when those events happen, when high net worth people sell stocks and sell houses, it triggers a capital gains event. You've then gone from unrealized gains, which is appreciation in a house that you haven't, you know, you haven't seen the actual dollars, or appreciation in the stock and you haven't quite seen the actual dollars. It goes from unrealized gains then to realized gains. And once you realize those gains, you have to pay capital gains taxes on those, somewhere between 15% and 35% based on your tax bracket. Well, this program defers how much tax you have to pay, and then it gets into kind of a series of events based on how long the money has stayed in a qualified opportunity fund, with the ultimate result being that after 10 plus years, you don't have to pay any capital gains on any of the appreciation of that asset. So if the property that you put money into then shoots up in value, or if the business that you put money into then shoots up in value, you don't have to pay capital gains on those assets. Mm.
All right, that makes so much sense.
That makes a lot of sense.
So
we break it down very, very well in our opportunities on 101. We want to make sure that everybody understands it, because it is a very dense and very complicated program. Mm-hmm. But being that we have a 5-year-old, we've gotten practice over the last 5 years of explaining
so
that the child can understand, and it helps them when we start to teach our classes.
Yeah, that's important. And just the whole capital gains thing is an important thing, even like you said with stocks, because a lot of people don't know, like, they base it on how long you keep the stock. If it's a long-term stock, the tax is less than if you sell it short-term. I'm pretty sure you guys already know that. But in talking about capital, so what do you think is, like, a better strategy with people? Because I talk to people about, like, during the buying process, and some people say, you know, they go the OPM route. They say, I ain't using my capital. And then some people are like, nah, I prefer to use my own money. So what is your mindset on that?
So for us, OPM is king, right? For us, we definitely value leveraging and understanding how to leverage other people's money to be successful. And then I can use my money, and I might be someone else's private lender or something like that, right? So we definitely leverage OPM. We think it's really important and helpful when it comes to even recycling dollars within the community, right? And how you're able to leverage and circle money around within your own community. But for us, yes, definitely OPM is king. We've used so many different strategies when it comes to putting our deals together and financing our deals, from private lenders to hard money lenders to nonprofits to seller financing to subject to. We've done all kinds of things, and that, I think, is why we've been able to scale the way we have versus someone who uses their own cash. You're limited to what you have, right? I don't have limits because I know how to leverage money that other people have.
Very true. I agree. Because I talk to some people and they like against it, and I never understand why. I'm like, I don't really get it, but I'm on your side with that. I like the OPM route too.
So I have a question, just to go back to opportunity zones one more time. But if you qualify to do it, you know, you can work with the program and use your money to get into the program and invest. Is there a specific way that you have to invest in these properties, such as, can you do fix and flips, or do you have to do rental properties per se, as far as fixing them up to get them like fully remodeled and livable and rebuilding the community that way? Is there like a specific way you have to do it?
That's a good question.
So first, I think it's important because I think that people get really confused sometimes on how to even do it, because you can't just go like buy a house in an opportunity zone. Like, you have to go through a whole process, put the money has to be in a fund, and then that fund invests in the property. So like there's like nuances like that on just how it works. That is important, but Chloe can talk about the Facebook thing.
Yeah, and then kind of going back to some of the nuances, you know, it's one of those programs where it's so new that not all the rules have been put in ink yet.
Gotcha.
Right? But there's still so many different things that have to be figured out. So they had a public hearing last month to answer a ton of questions that people submitted to get further clarification on how to invest in businesses, whether fix and flips are applicable, which is a term that's being used to define fix and flips is churning. So how do you churn money, right? You put the money into a fund, you put it into a property, you sell the property, the money comes back into the fund. How much fee can you collect? How much money has to then get put into a fund and get put back? Does it restart the 10-year period? There are tons of different questions that still need answers. And we're staying up to date on it. So we go to conferences, we get PowerPoint decks.
Right. And we keep that master, as things come up, so the 101 has like the, what is the program, how's it work? In that master class, every time new information comes up, we update that. So people who like join in early, they constantly get updates as the program continues to grow and change, because we expect it to, because not everything's defined yet.
Not everything's defined yet. But to answer your question from earlier, yes, it's online. You can move at your own pace. You know, charmcitybuyers.com, and we'll give you the link and everything to distribute followers.
Okay, cool. And a question I had was, are you guys investing outside of Baltimore? And another question I had was, how many properties do you guys own at the moment?
Yeah, so we still own our property in Connecticut, so we're still out of state owners.
Okay.
And we have.
And it's important to note we're out of state owners, and we don't have a property manager.
Yeah, we self manage.
So we self manage that property because we found rocket star tenants, and we screen tenants pretty well to make sure that they will respect our property as much as possible, especially when we're out of state. So fortunate, we're blessed too. We're very fortunate. One of them cuts the grass. One of them shovels the snow. It's a 3-unit multi. So we're able to leverage that and work with the individuals up there to help us maintain the property as much as possible. But yeah, so we're technically, we're out of state investors because we do have one, but we're not actively pursuing property right now that's outside of Baltimore.
Okay.
Right. So we have 20 rental units, and then we have 5 other properties on top of that we are renovating actively right now.
Wow.
So this, and then we have the construction projects.
Wow, that's
we're working.
That's dope. That's super dope.
And then we're working with others for, you know, construction management and helping other people manage their properties.
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's cool.
That's super cool. And so with you saying you guys have a rocket star tennis, that's very interesting, because I wanted to ask another question. I was watching your Instagram live before we got on the phone call, and you were talking about turnovers are the worst. So I was like, okay, yeah, this is something I definitely want to ask.
Yeah, well, turnovers are just a pain. Like, who wants to do them?
Right.
You want to have a team that stays in there for as long as possible. And for us, our goal is that our tenants get to the point where they can buy property from us. And so our very first tenant is still a tenant now, years later. And so we want tenants that are going to come and stay long term. I don't want to have to go in behind a tenant and have to turn it over. I want to do my due diligence up front and proactively, so I'm getting the right people in the door and I'm doing the right thing so that they want to stay. And so that's why I don't like, one of the reasons why I don't like turnovers, not to mention the fact that it's dead money time. You're spending money and not making money on the unit. But yeah, I just don't like them. I think early on when we first started to invest and be landlords, we didn't do everything perfectly, and we had crappy tenants, and those turnovers were absolutely nightmares. So I think that's probably part of it too.
We got stories for days.
We have tons of stories, and that all comes down to us learning the importance of due diligence on your tenants just as hard as your due diligence on your property, and really following process and screening your tenants well so that you don't have those same kind of problems.
Yep.
Okay. So what is your process on screening potential Tenants. My bad. I said, man, I'm getting tongue twisted. Potential tenants. Sorry about that.
So potential tenants, we're going to do background credit and eviction history reviews. We're going to do employment verification. We're reviewing pay stubs.
Reference checks.
I sometimes will go and we'll look and see where they live currently, like how they're living now. So that's going to give me indications on how they're going to treat my property.
And it's not like we tell them straight up, hey, we want to see your house to see how clean it is. No, we'll say, hey, let's meet to fill out this paperwork. I'll meet you at your house. What time is good for you?
Sure. Or even, you know, sometimes people call it like inspections. Like they just wanted to do a screening inspection and you meet at the property wherever they're living currently. But yeah, we have kind of a full process. We're going to understand like who the person is, what their habits are by looking at things like their payment history on their credit reports and stuff like that. We might not focus as much on the actual score, but I am going to want to see that if you do have issues or challenges on your credit report, it's in regards to student loans versus a Macy's card, right? Like, what are your priorities and like what are the habits and things that you've built?
Okay.
So me better under the tenant.
And it's very much a case-by-case basis.
Okay.
And we'll go from there. But we do have a very standard procedure.
Okay, that makes sense. And so, and with you guys having so many properties in Baltimore, are you managing them yourself or a property manager?
We have a team now. So okay. It's in-house. So okay. Ourselves as an in-house, but we have staff now that helps us from maintenance to people who manage our properties, but it's all in-house.
Okay.
Do you rent out to Section 8 tenants?
So
there are several different programs that provide people with assistance, financial assistance, to live into houses, from like a St. Ambrose model where you just have somebody who wants to move into a room in your house.
There's everyone always goes straight to Section 8, but there's so many different programs. So for us, we don't specifically have Section 8, but we do have tenants that have their rent paid by programs here in Baltimore.
Okay.
Oh, okay. That's dope too.
We're not against that at all. You know, it's
yeah.
We still screen the same way.
Same way.
So yeah. We're going to screen the same way because we're going to go through our process because that's our process. And we're going to, when there are programs involved, we're going to get a really good understanding and build a relationship with the case manager, which most people have a case manager. So that I have a relationship on that side. So I have a full support system. Like they end up being a quasi property manager as a result, because they're going to look out and manage the tenant just like we're going to manage the tenant in the property.
Facts. Yeah, that's true. And another question I have, I love asking couples this question, is do you feel like you have an advantage when you're working together in a relationship? Because I feel like we have an advantage working together. How do you feel about that?
Absolutely. No doubt about it. I mean, it's clear as day to me that I absolutely have an advantage with a partner who is a wife, mother, and business owner with me. Mm-hmm. I tell people pretty often, like, if you sleep eight hours in a day, right, that's what, 16 hours,
yeah, 16 hours.
Late time. Yeah. Right, of non-sleep time. So you can work, you can, you know, do whatever. But that means that Kiara and I together have 32 hours per day to get things done, right? And if you think about it that way, like the more people in your business, the more partners, the more property managers, the more contractors, whatever, employees, the more you can get done in per day is to be able to speak directly to Kiara on a regular basis.
Yeah, I think it's important because I think sometimes people get caught up in some people get caught up in not having like a spouse or someone right there that they can work with to invest in real estate. But for us, I usually say you need to have a team, right? So we have a lot of mentees who are women who I'm like, no, you know, just because you might not have a spouse or a partner specifically to work with you doesn't mean that you can't invest. It means that you just need to build your team in another way or another fashion, because teams and relationships and all that are key to success in real estate, whether it's a spouse or otherwise.
I agree 100%. That's when we had Todd Millionaire on the podcast. That was his main point is, you know, we're stronger in numbers and partnerships.
Yep, absolutely.
Yep. And another question I had was, we spoke a little earlier about being out of state and investing into Baltimore. It's probably a little bit more difficult and you needed a team. So what would you say is the thing, say, if someone outside of Baltimore, they're looking like, oh, man, I want to put my dollars in Baltimore. What is a good tip that you can give them? Because like I said earlier, I was trying to do that and I was having a hard time finding a good, like, reliable realtor. So I'm like, until you guys
the best advice I can give anybody when it comes to that is to contact Charm City Buyers. Get plugged in immediately.
Yes, sir. Yes, I like that.
You want to have boots on the ground. You want to have someone that can help point you in the right direction. But anywhere you invest, when you're investing out of state, you need to have a team. And so whether that team includes us or not, you need to have a strong team. And in Baltimore, you know, understanding that it's block to block here and all of that, you want to have someone who knows Baltimore to be able to help point you in the right direction.
And what's great is that we grew up here. Well, I grew up here, right? So I know the ins and outs. I know the different areas. I know the communities. But we've also been real estate developers and investors for 7 years here. So we're plugged in with the city's attorney who has to process evictions and receiverships where the owner of the property no longer is a private person or a company, but the city now owns it, right? We've got a good relationship with that person. We know about the Live Baltimore campaigns. We know about every single grant fund out there that helps either developers or home buyers with purchasing properties, right? We know about the large scale commercial anchor institutions that are doing large work, and we know the different properties around those areas that will soon increase in value. We've got very in-depth knowledge of Baltimore City, and we're happy to share it.
Oh man, that's dope. There you go.
With Charm City Buyers, can you explain exactly like what it is and what you guys offer? Because it's like, from what I see, it's like a community and you guys are like really shifting the culture with it and you guys have a lot to offer people. But can you just give us more details as to more about the program?
Yeah, so Charm City Buyers, what it's all about, really the whole point of us even creating the Instagram is starting to have the conversation around what it is we're doing, because I'll be honest, our parents, like family, didn't know we invested in real estate until we had quite a few properties. And we decided to start sharing because what we realized was that what we were trying to do was more than invest in real estate, but we were trying to change communities and really push this whole narrative and change the face of what investors look like, what developers look like, what landlords look like, being young, black, and a couple, right? There's a lot of nuances and newness that we brought to the game. And so we wanted to create a platform where we could duplicate those efforts by sharing what we've learned the hard way and giving people the opportunity to implement in wherever they are. And so it was kind of our way of almost duplicating ourselves all over by just sharing information. We created like the Instagram page and started to tell it that way. And, you know, it turned into people asking us a lot of different questions and being very processed and systems oriented. We created, you know, those questions that we got the most often. We would do workshops online or in person, and we'd turn them into classes and give people the opportunity to learn so that they can then apply that information and apply those learnings as they're investing wherever they are. It was really kind of our way of taking our value of being like landlords or investors or developers with a conscience and really helping to multiply that with other people throughout the country. And so that's what we've been able to do at this point, which is really, really cool. Being able to like share our learnings that we've learned the hard way in a way that people can just learn through some of the harder lessons that we've learned and be able to grow and flourish off of them as a result. And then for Baltimore specifically, because Baltimore has its nuances, and most cities honestly do, but have nuances around laws and, you know, being very black to black and how do you really be successful in Baltimore, and being that Baltimore is our focus on how do we push the community and change the narrative We have a program that we created called Next Gen. And so the Next Gen Accelerator is a 10-week intensive on investing in Baltimore, investing in real estate in general, right? We hit a lot of the, you know, what it takes to be successful in real estate, but we talk about Baltimore specifically, Baltimore neighborhoods, Baltimore city laws, Baltimore permits, stuff like that, to give people the tools and the resources that they need to be successful here in Baltimore, with the goal that everyone in the program purchase a property in Baltimore within 6 months. So we're not only giving the tools resources, we're also giving them deals. And so I'm sending them like things that are coming to me personally or things that we're coming across, and, you know, leveraging the relationship, I get to know each and every person, focus to know each and every person and say, this one sounds like it'd be a really good fit for you, and then help guide them through those processes. So it's like, how do we create and nourish and support folks who want to invest and want to do it in a way that helps them really, you know, change the narrative?
Yeah, wow. We keep the Next Gen cohorts purposefully small so that we can build that one-on-one bond with them, so we can better understand, okay, are you interested in more of a risk-averse approach, long-term hold, rentals? Great, we'll send rental opportunities your way. If you want to flip, we'll send flip opportunities your way. Kiara's really the spearhead on it. She does a great job with it. To back up a little bit for your question of, and again, sorry, Next Gen is an online class. It's not an in-person class. Everything we offer is online. But Charm City Buyers, if I was asked, what is Charm City Buyers? My answer would be, Charm City Buyers is a platform through which we share our educational experiences for other future real estate investors. So, you know, giving them all the tools that they need, whether it's our OPM class and all the different financing methods we've used, whether it's the interest in our opportunity zones, we literally will put our own spreadsheets that we use to computate whether or not a property is worth pursuing, whether it will be profitable, how long and how many years based on different assumptions. We offer that. We offer our Next Gen class. We've got several different packages that help people learn about the real estate investing journey. And it came directly from people asking us, hey, on a very regular basis, you guys are young, you guys are scaling fast, how? How, from text messages to DMs, first personal friends to then strangers. And we said, you know what, let's make it easier for us time-wise to explain it and to help educate folks by putting an online program together, multiple programs. Wow. And we still do in-person meetups and different things like that too, because that's really where it's fun for us. We get a lot of energy from other people who are in the room, networking, making bonds. We've helped investors meet wholesalers and the whole works. But that's the Charm City Buyers.
How has the local community accepted like what you guys are doing? Have you seen an increase in Black investors since you guys got started doing what you're doing in Baltimore?
Yeah, it's really exciting. Like people who years ago, we've done things like had people tour one of our houses as we're doing a renovation, and they're not only, you know, personal property owners in Baltimore, but they have their rental properties, and they're really kind of thinking about things differently when it comes to investing in real estate and property and the opportunity in Baltimore specifically. And so it's been a really, really cool journey. It's exciting to see how, you know, some of the seeds that we've planted, watching them kind of grow and flourish into action here, which is super, super dope. So not only people that are like our mentees that we've guided through the process, not only are they owning property here in Baltimore, but people that we've talked to at events and, you know, meetups or whatever. It's just really, really cool to see.
That's cool. So like when you get your properties, how involved are you in the entire process? Like, so if, let's say if you bought like a distressed property, do you guys like are there like every step of the way as far as construction and getting it up to code to be ready to rent out? Like how involved are you with that process per se?
Not for our properties, for our mentee properties?
For your properties.
For our properties? Oh yeah, we're involved in all of it.
Yeah, you have to be.
Yeah, so we're finding them. We don't really use realtors like that. We find the deals, we're negotiating them, we're getting them under contract. We have our own, well, it's not our own, other people use it too, but our title company is the one that we use all the time, right? And so we have a full system and we go through that process. We're involved in all of it. Yes, we have a team now, and so we're able to delegate and and train folks to be able to follow the process that we set forth. But we're involved 100%. We have very large in-depth deals or large in-depth construction projects where I had multiple calls today with our team on some SPM today. So we're definitely hands-on.
Periodic site visits, negotiating based on what material we want to use in the project, kind of a little bit of everything, yep.
That's interesting. That's amazing. That's interesting that you said you don't use realtors. So are you just going straight to owners like, yo, I want to buy your property?
Yeah.
Owners and wholesalers. Primarily. Yeah. Owners and wholesalers.
And how, because I just started wholesaling. Like it's been like 2 weeks ago. We just started and we like in the process or whatever. So I'm learning like sometimes when you go straight to the owner, they're like offended. Like, Why would you think my house is for sale? So like, how does that work like for you guys going like straight to owners saying like we want to buy your property?
Hey, right. Yeah. No.
How we approach it? Hey, Mr. Owner and Mrs. Owner, sorry to offend you. Hold on to our letter. You never know when you're looking to sell.
Yeah. A no now doesn't mean no forever. So just because someone calls and is kind of offended and just or whatever, you may go super low offer and someone's offended. That no now doesn't mean no forever. And you might end up getting a call back from them 6 months, a year, 2 years from now. You never know. We have people that had called us years after we had done some marketing in Connecticut. We had lived in Baltimore for years. And someone called, like, you still want to buy my house? So that's wholesaling is definitely like a longer tail game sometimes. And that's why it's important that you follow up and all that kind of stuff. But, yes. But yeah, people get mad. They'll leave you mean voicemails. Money, shake it off, and go call the next person, or talk to the next.
Yeah, that's true. And do you said you send letters to the owners, like postcards?
Yeah, we don't do postcards. We're old school. We still send letters, but our letters are dope, so people respond to them. So we don't do. We're not always like doing. I know the cool thing for people to do now is to just cold call people, which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
But we're still a little bit old school in our letters.
Okay.
See, because we've been doing the cold calling route, but like how you say with the letter thing, I suggested it a few days. I was like, you know, let's try and send out letters. Let's make it a little more personal. Because, you know, just on the phone, their initial thought process is kind of like, oh, no, I'm about to shut this down. They're soliciting me for, you know, whatever their purposes is. And I was like, maybe if we send out letters or postcards and, you know, it's try it that way, that might have a different impact on it.
True.
Right. And you should probably also, I don't know, sometimes people are getting their leads from the same place that a lot of other people are getting their leads from. And so they're getting mad because you called them 5 minutes after somebody else called them. And so you might want to kind of tweak your criteria a little bit, maybe if you're getting leads from somewhere that a lot of other people are.
That makes a lot of sense. And a question I like asking people, I love asking people this question. You know, a lot of people are anticipating a recession soon or, you know, just maybe the next couple of years, who knows? So I like asking people, like, are they holding, like, staying liquid so they could, like, buy up crazy during a recession? Or are they still being aggressive pre-recession? So, like, that's the question I propose to you guys.
Yeah, that's a good question, and nobody can predict the market, right? It's exactly. All about kind of what you see, how you feel, how risk taker you are, risk averse you are, all those types of things. For us, we see the recession a few years off, not 5 years off, just a few. So we're still staying pretty aggressive right now. We're not in our next, call it 12 to 24 months. We're not acquiring any additional flips. We're going to fix up and sell everything we've got and then kind of get another pulse check on the market and see kind of how to plan and strategize from there.
So it's for me, it's a market correction that's probably going to happen more so than a recession. So I think that a lot of people have a little bit of anxiety over the recession word when honestly the real estate is cyclical. So it happens usually every like 8 years or so, you have a correction and it just kind of evens out. We haven't had one in quite some time. And so we're due for a correction, right? You can't just have prices rise and not have a correction. correction of, all right, everyone who has bought or was going to buy has, right? And so you're going to have less buyers. And so if you have less buyers, it's standard supply and demand. I'm an econ person, so I'm not going to get all crazy. And so this, the correction for us is something that we expect. And so you kind of plan for it, but for being that our foundation is rentals, it's a little bit less jarring when you understand the difference between a regular market correction versus a market crash we had years ago where everyone lost everything.
Because of corrupt practices.
Right.
It's a little different now. Things are monitored more closely.
Right, and even beyond that, it's just a general real estate correction. You have to, it's typical, you have to go around the circle. We haven't made it around the circle in quite some time.
Right.
And so with that, it's the impacts will not, the dominoes won't fall, in my opinion, as hard and as quickly as they did a couple years ago because we're in a different place. And this is a more economic process that's happened for years and years and years and years.
Yeah, from July 2018 to December 2018, about this, July, maybe June or something like that, Baltimore saw some signs of a market dip. Since the new year, the houses have been selling at a faster rate, and maybe that's the worst of it, right? That may have been the market dip that we were all expecting and so terrified of. Opportunity zones are going to do, depending on how much money comes out of the stocks and out of paper assets and into the actual money that then gets translated into more jobs and everything else, opportunity zones may prop us up for more time than is expected. It's very,
it's very possible.
Yeah, you never know.
So we're gonna watch it and be thoughtful and make good decisions and do our due diligence and follow our process.
Yep, that's what I tell everybody. Just watch it, do your due diligence, and have a strategy in mind and stick to it. Yep. So we're going to get ready to wrap up. We appreciate you guys. We definitely appreciate you guys for coming on. You guys gave us a lot of gems, a lot of game. And just before we wrap up, where could people find you to get information, the classes, and all that stuff?
Sure. So you can definitely follow us at Charm City Buyers on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And you can always find out more about us at charmcitybuyers.com. But our Instagram is usually lit, so that's a great place to start.
Yep. So,
we'll send you guys a link to disperse.
Okay, cool. Yeah, but we appreciate that.
Thank you so much.
We definitely appreciate y'all coming on. We got to do this again sometime.
Yeah, absolutely. We look forward to watching your journey and watching you both grow and blossom.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, y'all. Have a good
day. You
too. Yep. Bye-bye. All right, guys. So that was another episode of the Millionaire Mindsets with Charm City Buyers, Kiara and Khalil. I hope it was a lot of gems and games that you guys could take from that episode. And we appreciate you guys for listening. And before we wrap up, let me give you guys my social media. For those who don't know, I'm Xavier C. Miller at Instagram. I'm XCM Park Hill on Twitter. Xavier Miller on Facebook. Xavier Miller 312 on Snap. And Deanna's going to give you her info.
Yep, so you can find me on Instagram at Deanna Kent. Twitter, Deanna S. Kent. And Facebook at Deanna Kent. And if you want to subscribe to the Millionaire Mindsets Daily text subscription, you could do so by texting at MMindsets to 81010. Again, that's at MMindsets to 81010.
And again, that's all we have for y'all. Please, you guys could like, comment,
rate, subscribe
the channel. We appreciate all that good stuff. And that's pretty much all we have for y'all. We have for y'all. See y'all next episode. Peace.
On the way to the big check. You ain't know I'm up next, but I'm on the way. You ain't take a risk because you're too afraid. I'ma just eat till I'm overweight. On the way.
A whole lot of shit on the way.
On the way.